Happy, happy Monday, Met fans. Are any Mondays really happy? Well, they are if the Mets win, but unfortunately, that did not happen yesterday. Tough, tough way to end the homestand. I expected a little bit better this homestand. It just didn't happen. What can you do? What can you do? Does anybody have an answer? The Mets hitting woes continued. Yesterday was one of those games where if you had a ticket to the game, it was painful from the first pitch on. It was a lopsided loss. The Mets just looked flat. Flatter than a pancake run over by a steamroller, if you ask me. And the excitement of Javi Baez being on the team wasn't enough to rescue the Mets and this struggling lineup yesterday. We're going to have to wake up some people on this team. Maybe Michael Conforto. Maybe we need to shoot him up with some adrenaline. Maybe a voodoo doll would help. I don't know what's going to happen with the Mets. But they just managed 3 hits in completing an underwhelming homestand with a 7-1 loss to the Reds at Citi Field. Now, you want the bats to come alive, especially with everybody healthy. But the Mets just averaged 2.73 runs during the 11-game stretch in Flushing. And I guess that kind of explains the homestand record of 5-6. A Jeff McNeil 6-inning homer counted for the Mets' only run on the day when they were dominated by right-hander Vladimir Gutierrez and the Cincinnati bullpen. A night after blasting a 2-run homer in his Mets debut, Baez finished 0-for-4. Conforto continued to hear the boos, and he went 0-for-2, and now his batting average has dropped down to 196. Oy, who ever thought Michael Conforto would be batting 196 in August? Oh, man, I expected superstardom from him, and we're going the opposite path here. I don't know what to say. I've rarely seen a Met player with as much potential as Michael Conforto have such a bad year in all my years of watching Mets baseball. But something's got to be done. They got to figure this out. We got a tough schedule. A lot of games this month with the Dodgers and Giants coming up. And it's got to start turning. It really does. Now, the Mets fell to 8-9 the second half. But they've maintained a 3.5 game lead in the NL East. They're going to begin a 7-game road trip through Miami and Philly. Hopefully they can put some distance between them and Philadelphia. I say the best team in that division right now, despite the Mets' record, is probably Atlanta. But the Mets didn't get their first hit against Gutierrez until the 5th inning. So I don't know. I don't know what's happened, folks. How do you explain all this? How? Does anybody have an answer for me? Anybody? You do have an answer for me? Oh, I don't even know where to continue at this point. I really don't. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words, folks. What do we do? Now, yesterday, our beloved Metropolitans didn't even get their first hit against Gutierrez until the 5th inning when Kevin Pillar singled through the third base hole. And to that point, the Mets' only other base runner was Brandon Drury, who drew a 2-out walk in the 2nd inning. Now, Stroman was on the mound yesterday. In his previous start against the Reds on July 21st, he just allowed 1 hit over 8 shutout innings. But Stroh wasn't nearly as sharp this time, encountering trouble in the middle innings. He did last 5 2/3 innings, allowed 4 earned runs on 8 hits with 4 strikeouts and 1 walk, raising his ERA to a season-high 2.80. The start was Stroman's 7th in the last 8, in which he pitched fewer than 6 innings. So we're not getting any length from these Stroman starts, and that's going to wear your bullpen down after a while. And things just weren't going Stroh's way yesterday. The good thing was, we got to see Javier Baez in the field, and he fired a relay throw dart to the plate that nailed Eugenio Suarez, who was attempting to score from first base on Tyler Naquin's double. Now, Max Schock's 2-out homer early in the inning had given the Reds their first run of the game. The blast was the first allowed by Stroman in his last four starts. Overall, he has surrendered 11 homers this season in 22 starts. And Kyle Farmer's RBI triple in the sixth gave the Reds their second run, and Tyler Stevenson's ensuing sacrifice fly put the Mets in a 3-0 hole. The rally started with Jesse Winker's double leading off the inning. Now, Miguel Castro replaced Stroman with two outs in the sixth and walked the first two batters he faced, including the pitcher Gutierrez on four pitches, to give the Reds a 4-0 lead. The Reds broke open the game with three runs and a ninth off Jeff Hartley. Stroman was asked about his confidence level in rotation with DeGrom out until at least September after he was shut down from throwing last week. Obviously, anybody can look in from the outside and see that's a huge hit for the Mets. But they really can't keep dwelling on the clubhouse. And it's amazing now with DeGrom not in a rotation, Stroman and Walker kind of like, not to say falling apart, but they are struggling these days. So we need someone to grab the bull by the horn. Luckily, Tyler McGill, who's pitching tonight, has been that guy. So let's just keep hoping for the best from Tyler. Maybe he is our new ace. But I know a guy who won't be the new ace. It's Kumar Rocker. And oh boy, did that thing blow up. The Mets were so enthusiastic about drafting Rocker. Much to do about it. But Sunday afternoon, after another loss to the Reds, or before the loss to the Reds, the Mets announced a loss and the fact that they failed to sign top draft pick Kumar Rocker. Now, a lot of fans were upset about this. They thought the Vanderbilt sensation was going to be their man. Him and Al Leiter's son Jack were the 1-2 punch, one of the best in college baseball history as far as a 1-2 pitching punch. But the Mets had concerns about Rocker's elbow following a physical examination, and Rocker's camp, headed by advisor Scott Boras, disputed those concerns, and the Mets never tendered an offer. It's really not the outcome they wished for. But my question is, why would you draft him if you didn't do diligence in checking out his health? I don't know. There's got to be more to this story than what we're hearing. But this does not shed good light on the Met front office. It's right up there with hiring Porter as the GM, when they didn't even do the research on him and his background. So it's a little concerning, without a doubt. And we're just going to have to see what transpires. The good thing is the Mets did salvage at least the number 11 pick in next year's draft. So it's almost like getting re-slotted next year. So they'll have two picks in the first round last year. But it just, I don't think that was their intentions. Some are saying, yeah, maybe that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to draft him and then just save the pick for next year by not signing him. But I don't think any team would do that. It's being a little too cute. Now, they could have gambled on Rocker getting Tommy John surgery if he needed it and recover. But it would just have set him back a few years on the time clock, so, and the Mets. So, who knows? Who knows? Now you've got to wonder why other teams didn't select Rocker. Like, the Angels were right behind, above the Mets in the draft, and they took a high school southpaw instead of right after Rocker. I should say they followed the Mets in the draft. But who knows? I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry, the Angels actually did have the slot above the Mets, and they passed on them. And we know how the Angels drafted pitcher after pitcher after pitcher. Every one of their draft picks this year was a pitcher, and they chose not to choose Rocker. Like I said, the Mets do get a makeup pick next year. That will be no lower than the 11th. And just to give you an example of some of the players you can draft with the 11th slot, 11th pick draft choices have in the past been Max Scherzer, Andrew McCutchen, George Springer, and our own Dominic Smith. Now, they won't get the 1.3 million back in this whole ordeal that they spent with the rocker, but what are you gonna do? They're just perfect nightcap, I guess, the way the homestand ended. That sweepy 7-1 defeat, I was painful to watch yesterday against the Reds. And now we're 3.5 games over the Phillies still. Something's got to give. Can't always have that 3.5, 4-game lead. The Mets are going to pull ahead or they're not going to pull ahead. We'll see. We'll see. What we want to see is JD Davis kind of breaking out of his slump. That's kind of taking us all aback. I thought JD was just going to wake up in bed and go 2-for-4, 2-for-5. But his swing is a little bit slumping these days. And he was benched for a third straight day as Rojas, and you can't blame him. He went the hot bat with Brandon Drury in the lineup at third base. And Jonathan Villar started at third base the previous two games. And let's be honest, he's a much better defensive player than JD. Now, JD owned a 214, 298, 405 slash and 42 at bats in July. So he really, really hasn't been hitting the way we had hoped. You like his approach. But the guys who are really throwing hard are the ones that Davis is having problems with, and he's having trouble catching up, and then he's not recognizing the breaking ball. So overall, it's been a little bit of a clusterfuck, as I like to say, on JD when he's up at the plate. But a guy like JD is so talented, he'll turn himself right. He's just got to figure it out, and maybe this few days off is going to set him back and clear his head and go back to where he was before. Now, Willie Guillorme was placed on the injured list with a left hamstring strain. The veteran fielder sustained the injury while scoring a tying run in the ninth inning from second base the previous night. So the Mets recalled Jeff Hartley from AAA Syracuse to take the roster spot. And the Nimmo concerns remain. He was absent from the starting lineup for a second straight day with a tweak in his left hamstring, but popped out as a pinch hitter in the sixth inning. He didn't remain in the game to play defense. Now, before the game, Nimmo said it was possible he will be cleared to play center field Monday. He says he's not concerned about the hamstring, and he could have played Saturday, but they're being cautious. It's more about trying to conserve a day or two than 4 weeks somewhere else. And Tyler McGill is in the topic of possible injury. He interrupted his pregame throwing to have his fingertip examined by a trainer, but said there isn't an issue that will prevent him from pitching Monday in Miami. Let's sure hope that's the case because we need him pitching the way he always has. So you want to have a healthy finger for Tyler. The Mets began August at 55-48 for a .534 winning percentage. The last time the Mets had better winning percentage entering August was 2008, when they were 58-50 for a .537 percentage. So technically, this is their best winning percentage since they've moved to Citi Field after 103 games. So there you go. There's a positive note for us, isn't it? And like I said, I don't know what's going to happen with Kumar Rocker. Not, yeah, is it going to have a negative impact on the Mets? But we'll see. But that being said, I think it's some time for Jeopardy and Trivia to get us off this negative news, don't you think? Okay, here we go. Let's rock and roll. What do you say we give us the I give you the trivia question first. Here's the trivia question. Who did Dwight Gooden replace as the youngest 20-game winner in baseball history? Once again, who did Dwight Gooden replace as the youngest 20-game winner in baseball history? Today's Met Final Jeopardy. Two clues. Traded with Anderson Garcia and Ryan Buchanan by the New York Yankees to the Mets in exchange for Armando Benitez on July 16, 2003. In the 2003 season, he became the first player from the Staten Island Yankees to become a New York Yankee. So your two clues are: traded with Anderson Garcia and Ryan Buchanan by the Yankees to the Mets in exchange for Armando Benitez on July 16, 2003. In the 2003 season, he became the first player from the Staten Island Yankees to become a New York Yankee. We'll be back at the end of the podcast to see how you did. So write down your answers, lock them in, and then we'll check to see how you did at the end of the podcast. Okay, now it's time for some Met birthdays. We only have one today. But who remembers Dae-Sung Koo? I think Randy Johnson does. Remember his miracle hit? Didn't that cost Mike Piazza some moolah? He said he would never, ever get a hit off of Randy Johnson. Well, it's his birthday today. He is turning 52. Now, Dae pitched in 33 games for the Mets in 2005. Wasn't that bad? Basically a short relief pitcher. 23 innings of pitched only with a 3.91 ERA. And it's his birthday today. So let's all wish Dae-Sung Koo, Randy Johnson's favorite hitter, a happy, happy birthday. Now, how about we go through some transactions that happened on this date, August 2nd. Here's the first one. The Mets purchased Cal Kuntz from the Chicago Cubs on this date in 1967. Cal was a key reliever in that 69 Miracle team. This date in 79, the Mets purchased Jose Cardenal, pretty good outfielder with some pop, from the Phillies on August 2nd, 1979. This date in 2008, the Mets signed Ramon Martinez. Yes, Pedro's brother. This date in 2020, the Mets traded Jordan Humphreys to the Giants for Billy Hamilton. And on this date in 2020, the Mets sold Tyler Bashor to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now let's go back and celebrate a day in Met history from 1973. And today we put the spotlight on Mr. Cleon Jones. Now at this point in the 1973 Mets pennant race, Yogi Berra's club, they were still 10 games on below 500. That is hard to fathom considering they went to the World Series. They were in last place in the NL East Division. They were 9 back. And everybody was calling for Yogi's head at this point. There was even a fan survey asking who the Mets should ask, the manager, the GM, or the chairman of the board. The fans voted for Yogi to stay as he was that popular a figure. So I think that's maybe the reason why Yogi did stay. The fans loved him. Berra had just stated to the press a few days ago his now famous line, "It ain't over till it's over." Doug McGraw shouted out his famous "You Gotta Believe" motivation call a few weeks earlier at Chairman M. Donald Grant's team meeting. And as we all know, never give up. Things did turn around as most of the injured regulars returned to action. Excellent pitching, an amazing September run, got the Mets to the East Division. A big, big win over the Red Machine, the NLCS, in a 7-game run, which they just fell short in the World Series against the mighty A's. Now, one of the regulars was back in action was Cleon Jones from Mobile, Alabama. Cleon was one of the Mets' main hitters. He had already missed almost 2 months of the action with an injury. He returned in July and started making a difference. On this night, he reached his own career milestone. The Mets hosted the reigning NL Eastern champion Pittsburgh Pirates, who were only 51-57. Denny Murtaugh's Pirates were struggling at this time. The Pirates were a mighty force in those days, winning 5 of 6 division titles from 70-75. And tonight, the Mets' Ray Sadecki took on the Pirates' Jim Rooker. Here's the lineups. For the Pirates, Rennie Stennett at second base leading off, Manny Sanguin catching, batting second, Al Oliver center field batting third, Willie Stargell left field batting fourth, Richie Zisk right field batting fifth, Bob Robertson batting sixth, playing first base, Richie Hebner third base batting seventh, Dal Maxfield playing short batting eighth, and Jim Rooker pitching batting ninth. For our beloved Metropolitans, the amazing Mets had Don Hahn playing center field leading off, Felix Mian batting second, Willie Mays giving it a shot at first base batting third, Cleon Jones right field batting fourth, the Hammer John Milner was in left field batting fifth, Jerry Grody catching batting sixth, Wayne Garrett third base batting seventh, Teddy Martinez batting eighth and playing short, and Ray Sadecki pitching. Now, in the bottom of third inning, the Mets struck with consecutive singles from Hondo, Don Hahn, Felix Mian, and Willie Mays. It was Mays' 1,895th career RBI. Next up was Cleon Jones, and Jones doubled to right field, scoring Mays and Mian with the Mets' second and third run. And for Cleon, it was a milestone 1,000 hit. Jones by now was with the Mets for a decade, having played parts in 9 seasons. He was there for the bad clubs and then the main hitter on that 69 championship team. Once again, he was the Mets' main left fielder and key hitter in another pennant season, the 73 season. Now in the eighth, Mion reached on an error. Willie Mays single, and another Pirate error led to Mion scoring her first. It was 4-0. Jones then grounded out, moving Mays to third. He would score on Jerry Grody's sacrifice bunt. Veteran Ray Sadecki had himself a shutout going into the ninth inning. He would allow a run and be relieved by Tug McGraw. It was the Tugger's 12th save. Now, after a terrible start, McGraw would be one of the best relievers in the game the rest of the way, helping the Met cause. And the win was Sadecki's second, 2-1. So the Mets were still hanging tough in 73 when they beat the Pirates, and Cleon experienced hit number 1,000. What else happened on this day in Met history? Phil's pitcher, in this day, 1962, Phil's pitcher Art Mahaffey gives up 2 home runs to Frank Thomas and 2 more to Marv Thornberry. But he negated those with a grand slam of his own in the third inning, and he topped the Mets 9-4 in New York. So they were all solo shots, and that allowed him to stay in the game and win the damn game. And this day, 1966, Ozzie Virgil drove in 3 runs, and Juan Marichal, making his first relief appearance of the year, picks up a 17th win as the Giants edge the Mets 5-4. The win moves the Giants 63-44 back ahead of the Dodgers and Pirates by a game. That was quite a pennant race in 66. On this day in 1977, here's a little bit of a novelty. Houston catcher Brad Ausmus became the first catcher to wear the Fox Sports catcher cam, a small camera on the top of his mask, in the Astros 6-0 win over the Mets. And you're probably asking yourself, all right, what's going on the Facebook group, New York Mets, A Way of Life? Are you? All right, well, let's check in with the group, see how everybody's doing, what's being talked about. I'm excited. You excited? Oh, by the way, if you're listening to this podcast and are not subscribing, it'd be greatly appreciated if you actually subscribe to it. You'll be notified every time a new one is up, and you can go into our library of all the great podcasts we've done in the past. If you want to go back and listen to one of them, I highly recommend it. The other thing I recommend doing is joining the Facebook group, New York Mets Baseball Life, if you're not a member. So much good stuff about the Mets for serious diehard Mets fans is discussed there every day. If you ever want to reach me, my email address is philstan41@gmail.com. So what's going on in the group? Dan Wiener actually came in with a comment on the whole Kumar-Steve Cohen situation. There was an article posted that Steve Cohen is whiffing on Kumar Rocker, and it kind of made the Mets look Wilpon-esque. Well, Dan says, really? They got an 11th pick next year to make up for it, don't they? Maybe they took him on purpose to not sign him, especially with Scott Boras' arm, too much dollars, lower draft position, etc. Haven't they spent enough already? Don't you think they'll keep Baez and re-up to Grom? We'll pull and ask my Tukas. Give me a break. Good point. No one will ever know, but Dan does make a good point. Could have been planned right along. When I posted an article about J.D. Davis slumping, Tom Ragone said, we should have traded Davey as part of the deal to the Cubs to get Baez and Bryant. Yeah, in hindsight, that may have been the move. But I don't know if we would have gotten Chris Bryant for J.D. Davis, but who knows. I think the Cubs probably were going for something more looking towards the future. Those were some of the topics discussed in the group. Like I said, join the Facebook group and you'll see everything that's being discussed. Always 5-week good conversation series for the Met fan. And really appreciate all your guys' support. So now what we're going to do is go back to the Met Trivia and Jeopardy question today and tell you how you guys did. Trivia question was, who did Dwight Gooden replace as the youngest 20-game winner in baseball history? The correct answer is Bullet Bob Feller of the Cleveland Indians. Hall of Famer and considered one of the best pitchers ever. So Dwight had good company with Bob Feller there. So congrats to Tom Ragone on being the first to submit the correct response. Yesterday's Jeopardy was traded with Anderson Garcia and Ryan Bukonda by the New York Yankees to the New York Mets in exchange for Armando Benitez. on July 16, 2003. 2003 season, he became the first player from the Staten Island Yankees to become a New York Yankee. The correct response to that one is, who was Jason Anderson? Congrats to John Tierney on being the first to get that one right. Good job, guys. You hit the home run and knocked it out of the park. Well, that's going to wrap it up for another podcast for today. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Let's continue their quest for division pennant tonight when they visit the Marlins. Going for the Mets, Tyler McGill, one of my faves, 1-0 with a 2.04 ERA. TBD, our favorite Marlin pitcher's going for the Marlins, so we're going to have to wait and see who pitches for the Marlins. Mets come into the game 55-49, still first place by 3.5 games. Marlins are having a rough year, 44-61. They signed Don Mattingly with that extension, and I guess they're going through the rebuild process. But, things are looking up for the Marlins, and we'll see what happens. That's going to wrap things up. Tune in tomorrow with hopefully we'll have a happy Met recap. Enjoy the day. It's a Monday. Let's make it a good week. And hopefully the Mets can help us out with a big win, and we can talk about the happy recap tomorrow. Thanks again for listening, guys. See you tomorrow.